I brought the biblical text just to demonstrate that in the Bible there is a, we often translate this not as screaming, but it is in fact a scream. Vanitzak, right? Sa'aka. The overlap between prayer and screaming in the Bible is strong. When we think, yeah.
Well, I just realized that in the Kedusha, they're talking about Rosh Gadol when they're praising God. So,
right.
Definitely some loudness involved.
There's a lot of noise in the Kedusha, which has something to do with the angels singing and also with their wings. Probably was a lot of the noise, the flapping. Got loud up there with all those wings. But okay. But what is the main distinction between the Shema and the Amidah in terms of volume and why? And just to be clear on the Shema, how must I perform the Shema?
Needs to be heard.
Right. Mashmia lo'ozno. Right. Hakoreat shma velo yishmia lo'ozno. Yatsa. Yatsa, if I'm yotze, it means that I have fulfilled the obligation, but not in the ideal sense. So if you didn't cause yourself to hear the words, yes, you fulfilled the obligation, but the ideal is to cause yourself to hear the words. In other words, to say it loud enough so you could hear yourself. Right? Yishmia lo'ozno. Rabbi Yossi says if you didn't do that level, you didn't even say the Shema. Right? So there's something about the Shema which must be loud.
Oh.
Okay? Yeah, it's a little confusing in the Mishnah, if you're not used to it, but fundamentally they're debating the minimum standard, and the minimum standard is you need to hear it. Rabbi Yossi would say if you don't even hear it yourself, you have not said the Shema. What's the distinction between that and the Amidah? Yeah?
The Amidah, you're quiet. I mean, it's also the Shema, at least the way we have it now, is everyone is together very often, says it out loud together. And the Amidah, we were talking about that we like to go into our own personal space. Both of us are saying how even if we're sitting in a group, we like to go to our own separate space, to the outskirts that we were talking about.
Right.
Amidah, just specifically, I think it's a very personal davening. We were talking about the difference between personal davening before.
Putting the talus.
Yeah, I mean, there's something. I mean, it's interesting. The sources don't assume that you're saying the Shema in a group of 10 or in a group setting. Although that tshuva of the Ridbaz seems to be getting at that aspect.
But Shema is a proclamation. Amidah is not.
Right, so I think there's some character that you are doing different things between Shema and Amidah. With the Shema, you're actually performing something with the words that you're saying. That is to say, you're accepting the yoke of King, you know, God's kingdom on your,
Or basically, Hakoreh Shema velo Hishmia. How could you be doing the Shema without the Hashmia?
Nice. Okay.
How could you do it without the Yachad? How could you be declaring God's oneness without being in one?
In one unified performance of the word Echad.
Right. Yeah.
Good. Right. So there's a lot of performing, but also you are accomplishing something by saying the Shema. It's as if you're saying I do under the wedding canopy, right? You're not just saying something. If you whispered it wouldn't be the same. You're making a declaration which accomplishes something, which moves a state of reality into the next stage. Yeah. Yeah, good. So there's actually a whole literature around people who are deaf in rabbinic sources, specifically because, interestingly, unlike blind people in an oral culture, deaf people were at much greater disadvantage. We often think today as a blind person might be at a greater disadvantage, or at least they're playing on some equal playing field in terms of disadvantages. But in an oral culture, being deaf was severely worse than being blind. There's a lot of rabbis who are not a lot. There's a number of rabbis who are blind. No rabbis who are deaf. So I don't remember the particular ruling around the Shema for deaf people, but they're in a completely different category in which mitzvot do not have the same applicability to them. Just because of the orality of the nature that we're talking about here.
Shmuel Lewis has written on that.
Could be. Okay, Amidah. What are you doing in the Amidah? Is this thing from Shema?
Well, you're saying, it says that you say it silently, but with your lips moving, because that's how Hannah did it.
Good. Okay, so first of all, we have an individual model of someone that we can imitate on a performance level when you're talking about the Amida, and that's Chana, right? Where her lips are moving, but she was making no sound, which caused Eli the priest to think that she was drug or crazy or both, but is the way that we're supposed to perform the Amida. I mean, the whole connecting the Amida and Chana is a whole other interesting topic. Like, we're often looking for the women in the Amida, but the whole Amida is based on a woman, not just any woman, but a barren woman whose husband isn't listening to her and who has a rival who is vexing her. It's a very, very emotionally fraught model of someone to base your prayer life on. And I think that gets to also the silence of it. In many ways, words fail Chana, because when she speaks her troubles to Elkanah, he doesn't listen to her. Mm-hmm. And she makes this neder to hand over her son, such that sort of a tragic story, when she does have the baby, she has to then hand him over to the temple. Mm-hmm. So, but in that moment of sort of, you know, this pure longing, you know, she's bringing no volume to the words. Yeah.
There's a sense of there's the two statements about, you know, lacking faith, A, and B, false prophecy.
Uh-huh.
It's this sense. It seems to be a sense that if your Amida is being heard, if you're saying your Amida such that anybody other than God is hearing it, then it's like you're saying it to somebody other than God, and that's just icky.
Right, right, exactly. It's a different kind of. It's just a different mode of prayer with a different intended audience, let's say, even though obviously both. In other words, when I say the Shema, I mean, the Midrash on the Shema is actually
not
who's being.
God.
You're not talking to God. Right? I mean, you're talking Shema Yisrael.
Right.
The Midrash there is it's actually about Jacob's sons who say to his father, Yisrael, Yaakov, don't worry, Yisrael, God is one. Right? We're not going to stray from the flock, unlike our uncles. Right, he responds Baruch Shem, but that's not the case with the Amida, you know, where you're actually addressing God, and they're playing off in that source number 8. They're playing off of the priests, the prophets of the showdown between Eliyahu and the Baal prophet, where Eliyahu's egging them on and scream
louder,
a little louder, you know, maybe then Baal will hear you and eat the sacrifice. It's a joke. You think that God is going to listen to you if you're being louder? Come on, that's not what it's about. And that's a completely different character of the Amida. There's a lot more to say about this, and I want to move on to the workshop part of this. But just to end with one last text, because it actually jumps on something that Raviva said yesterday when she was thinking about silence. So the Amida is meant to be whispered. It's not meant to be completely silent. The whole idea of reading something in silence is a modern concept. In the ancient world, and even the medieval world, no one would read quietly. There's no such thing. We don't have books.
Vayikra,
you call, is the same as read. V'hagita bo yomam v'layla, we say about Torah. Hagita, ne'ege yomam v'layla, right? Hagah is a low growling sound. Right? That's what you're supposed to do with Torah. It's supposed to be, you know, reviewed orally with sound. But there is a moment of silence. I was talking about this with Joey yesterday, and it's actually because we were talking yesterday about silence in Raviva's class, and I was thinking about where is the moment of silence in davening? Where are there supposed to be silent pauses? And actually, the one that came to mind for me was the Birkat Kohanim, where this text over here, the one that's conveniently not labeled with a number, spells out the choreography for how you recite Birkat Kohanim. So that's Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera said in the Erev Chista, the reader cannot call the priest for the blessing, the priestly blessing, until the congregation says Amen to the previous bracha. And then the priest can't start their blessing until the reader finishes calling them. The congregation can't say Amen until the priest finishes saying Yivarechecha. And the priest can't start the next, you know, Ya'er, until the congregation says Amen. So what you have is this sort of necessity of breaks that actually happen. If people can't overlap with each other, then you have this moment, it can be even just like a split second, of silence that inserts itself in between the Torah text. And if you think of how Birkat Kohanim appears in Bamidbar, there are actually breaks. We're talking about this as well in Aviva's class. There are physical breaks in the Torah. There are line breaks that you're basically repeating here when you make those pauses. So I bring this as a way of saying that, in regular prayer, Shema, Amida, Birkat Kohanim, we have a range of volume that we can access. And I think the point of these sources is to say that prayer is not meant to be a monotonous experience. It's meant to actually have texture and topography to the sound experience. Some of that is related, very legally to the prayers that are being said, and some of it is of our own making. And it's that way that I want to actually do with you in the last 10 minutes or so that we have, which is the experience of mumbling. Now, mumbling is an often maligned, poor cousin to singing, because there's nothing, there's no melody, and you don't need any, training. But I think it's a skill that is a little bit of a lost art. I mean, Heschel, I brought this Heschel quote just for a little bit of backup here. He says, "Let us learn how to chant our prayers. It's one of our tragedies that we did not know how to appreciate the very soul of our ancient speech, the chant, and instead have adopted a pompous, monotonous manner." But by that, he's meaning something other than a mumble. Let us try to recapture the last traces of our ancient chant. Let us try to express what we say. There's something expressive in actually giving voice and sound to all the words that are in the Siddur. If you think of that low growl sound as the way in which our ancestors were experiencing prayer, right, any text that's being learned is being articulated, but it's not enunciated. It's being given some sound. And so I want to practice that with you a little bit here. Because I think that it's something that we have to actually learn how to do. And it doesn't come naturally to a world in which enunciation is valued, as is melody. So we're going to take a look at the last text on the page too. It's the first line of Ashrei. If you know it by heart, you don't need to look at the text.
Yeah.
And we're going to try to say it with some mumbling affect. Okay? So just bear with me here, people. It's going to work nicely. We're going to do things in groups of five. So just to get warmed up, we're going to read it five times together. Okay? Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yalu Hasela. 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 Okay, now I think mumbling also has to do with volume, so we're going to do it quietly and loudly. Okay? So let's do it a little bit quieter. Okay? Five times. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yalu Hasela. A little quieter. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yalu Hasela. Not too quiet that it's silent. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yalu Hasela. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yalu Hasela. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yalu Hasela. Okay, now we're going to do it louder. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yalu Hasela. Louder.
Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yalu Hasela.
Louder.
Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yalu Hasela.
Even louder.
Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yalu Hasela.
Louder.
Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yalu Hasela.
Good. That was good. That's a range of volume. It's available to us. Now we're going to emphasize one word. There's six words. We're going to emphasize one word a little bit louder than the others. Let's do Beitecha. Okay? Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yalu Hasela. 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 Okay, we're going to pick another word. How about,
just want to point out,
very interesting because there was longer silence after the Vaitecha than when we were doing the other one. So it's just, we were talking about the silence yesterday. It's, you know, it's like we needed a longer time to take in the concept of the Vaitecha.
Is it the concept or just the sound?
Or the sound of it, just to get to be able to handle the sound of it. Because it was so much louder.
Nice. Well, we have three words and then three words.
It's also where the
like
thought.
Yeah, yeah, there is a positive, but it
we will analyze all of this when we're done mumbling. But we're not mumbling yet. We're going to pick another word, okay? We're going to do od. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, od Yahalut Vasela. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, od Yahalut Vasela. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, od Yahalut Vasela. Louder. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, od All right, now what we're going to do is everybody pick a word that you want to emphasize. Got it? Ready? One, two, three. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yahalut Vasela. 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 Good. Now, there's one critical element to mumbling, and that is the low rumble. Okay? So everybody go like this. Good. Now we're going to lead that right into Ashrei. Ready? Ashrei, Ashrei, Beitecha, Od Yahalut Vasela. Ashrei, Ashrei, Beitecha, Od Yahalut Vasela. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yahalut Vasela. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yahalut Vasela. All right, good. Now, everybody got their word that they said louder?
Yeah.
Hold on to that word. Get your grumble on. We are going to do this faster, okay? Mumbling is nothing if it's not fast. Here we go. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yahalut Vasela.
Ashrei
Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yahalut Vasela.
Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yahalut Vasela.
Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yahalut Vasela.
Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yahalut
Vasela. Faster. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yahalut Vasela.
Ashrei
Why'd you stop? Okay. Anyways, I hope this gives us a little experience of mumbling. I think that what I wanted to end with a student of mine. I was upset at the way in which we were not mumbling in our davening upstairs, so I and took everybody downstairs and we did mumbling together.
Very live.
And a lot of people were kind of freaked out by it, but this is my student Hannah, who just did a podcast where Joey and I were interviewed about sound, so I can email it to you. But she has a little, we'll just end with this in our last 2 minutes.
While I was studying as part of the prayer community at Yeshiva Hadar, Ellie ended the Talmud class early to talk about the condition of our prayer and to illuminate the importance of engaging liturgy at times not through singing, shouting, or even enunciating the words, but through mumbling. The merits of mumbling are often neglected in communities that see themselves as spiritual. I had always thought mumbling through a verse meant not paying attention to that verse, that singing was the way to really express intention and passion, that mumbling misses the poetry of a given psalm or section of liturgy, that a mumbler overlooks whatever spiritual or emotional context the text has to evoke. A But that day, when Ellie gave us a mumbling lesson, literally making everyone in the room mumble through Ashrei, a commonly recited psalm, having us choose one word per line to say clearly and focus on and round the corners of other words, opened a door for me. I both started to experiment with mumbling and to generally experiment with level, speed, and amount of focus on the word. It changed the way I relate to the lengthy liturgy. Parts of daily services became a meditative practice, a sort of rocking in my own rhythm, pitch, speed. What I did to the words, got louder or slower, mumbled or enunciated, changed them. There is something liberating about consciously sailing through, letting each consecutive psalm bring me deeper or higher, into letting go of myself, preparing to come into prayer. And song becomes a brilliant act.
She goes on to talk about song. But anyway, I appreciate you taking the risk with me on the mumbling train. And
the rumbling mumbling
we'll be mumbling with you at future davening experiences.
Oh, yeah.